This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Warriors This Week continues on 95.7 The Game.
What is this, Ken? What is this? This one of your New York beats?
That's Trick Daddy right there, Miami's finest.
Ah.
I'm a thug.
I'm a thug. I ain't. That's for sure. That's Dan DeVoe and Evan Giddings with you here. 1 hour in, 2 hours to go on Warriors This Week. We are taking your calls at 888-957-9570. Of the Warriors right now, 5 games above .500, 24 games to go. They come off a 3-1 week, only lost to Denver. Then they go on the road. They take down Washington. They take down New York. They beat Toronto last night on a back-to-back. And then they get the Boston Celtics tomorrow afternoon at the Garden, the number one team in the NBA, having won their last 10. The Warriors have won 8 in a row on the road. And the last 3, I think, have been because of what you talked about, Dan, which is their depth and their younger players continuing to emerge. And I just wonder, with Andrew Wiggins being out due to personal reasons, and it looks like he's going to miss tomorrow, I expect him to miss, I don't know, a total of maybe, you know, in between 5 and 10 games. At that point, if the Warriors continue to play good basketball, like for example, if they win tomorrow in Boston, which we all certainly hope they do, then it does pose the question of, well, should Moody continue to start? And should Wiggins, who throughout this season has come off the bench due to a lack of production, but the Warriors began this run about a month and a half ago with Wiggins in the lineup, with Kuminga, with Draymond primarily coming back, gluing them together. Do you believe that if the Warriors play and continue this play at this level of basketball, that Moody is someone that can continue, should continue to be in the starting five?
Well, either way, he needs to play.
Yeah.
So either he continues to start if things are going well for the Golden State Warriors, but he certainly has proven, if he stays in this trajectory, that he's got to get in that rotation. You got to get this guy minutes. I still see him as a really, really good bench player. When I see him play as effective as he is as a starter, I think on a good team, he's, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 in the rotation. But would I be surprised if Steve Kerr said, you know, we're sitting Wiggins and going with Moody? No, not at all. And I think a lot of people in Dub Nation would be down with that. But either way, this idea of him disappearing for a couple of weeks and getting DMP'd and not playing at all, like, I think Moody has now made the case that that has to end. Like, let's stop that nonsense, okay? We've seen what it is that he can do. And everything that people have been clamoring for, that Moses Moody can provide, and he's a guy that's a baller, he's a good guy, keeps his nose clean, and not only that, this dude has effort on just about every play. And I'm all about that youthful energy, and it's another guy in his early 20s that, if nothing else, if he's a starter, certainly could see that, but if he's not, I think at the end of the day, what we've recognized is that Moody now has made the clear statement for himself and to everybody else that he deserves to get run.
I wholeheartedly agree. I think that in regards to the question about identity, Curry seems to feel like it's close to solved. The identity of this team, to me, is experience, it's toughness, it's being undersized, and most importantly, it's a next man up mentality that everyone on that team has now embodied, and none more so recently than Moses Moody. You look at the 3 games, he's a plus 36, 12.5 points in 27 minutes. He's also getting multiple steals. He's also blocking shots. He's now shooting in a small sample size, 44% from three-point range. That's a guy that has carved out a role for himself, whether it's as a starter, as a bench player. He has taken full opportunity of his moment, and I'm very interested to see what he does against Boston, because this is a guy that, to your point, gives you heart. He gives you hustle, and I think he raises the floor of this team. I'm not sure he raises and pushes the ceiling, but you know exactly what you're going to get on a given night from Moses Moody, and that to me is valuable, whether it's 15 minutes, whether it's 20 minutes, whether it's been playing at 27 like he has the last three games. This is a guy that the Warriors, I think, need. And that's what I've learned over the last three games and have learned over the course of this season watching Moody. When Wiggins is out, they need Moody. Even when Wiggins comes back, whenever he does, I think they still need Moses Moody. Will he be the difference between them winning a championship and not? Probably not. But it is unquestionably a position to where the Warriors are better when he plays. And I think that minutes need to be found from other pieces and other places in this roster to prioritize this guy, because he's earned it.
And this is what I think you do specifically. Dario Saric, out of the rotation. Kevon Looney, out of the rotation. Pajemski, you know I was a big fan of Pajemski and starting and replacing Klay Thompson before it ever happened, but I don't think that he needs to get as much run as we said. I think he can, in other words, I think Moses Moody can take some of the minutes from that of Pajemski, and he could also take the minutes from Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson's been good coming off the bench, but he's gets so much time. Like, the love affair that Steve Kerr has with Klay Thompson, it's almost as if I feel bad taking you out of the starting lineup, but I tell you what, I'm going to make sure that you play.
Mm-hmm.
He got, what, 30 minutes? He gets like 30 minutes a game now. And, yeah, he can be good, but he doesn't need to get that much run. Not at the expense when I'd like to see a little Trayce Jackson. I'd like to see, you know, Moses Moody a little bit more. So if he doesn't start, I think the first thing you do is, okay, Kevon Looney and Pajemski, you guys are out of the rotations because I can't juggle. I can't continue to do this with 12 guys. So I'm going to make it a little easier on myself and play 10. Even at 10, it's challenging. Okay, how do I get Moody some more run? Well, I'm going to reduce some of the minutes that I've been giving to Klay Thompson as well as Pajemski, as well as removing the other two guys from the rotation. That, to me, is a start.
Interesting. I'm curious what fans feel about that. 888-957-9570 is the number. 925 Comcast Business Text Line would take Moody over Pajemski in a heartbeat. All pods can do on defense is take a charge, and other players will soon tire of this tactic. I'm not so sure about that. I think Pajemski is valuable. But it's interesting, as we move closer to playoffs, we will begin to think about, okay, what does the rotation look like? Who needs to be in the rotation? And that's where I do think that Kerr, whenever Wiggins comes back, will ramp him up to the point where he can get back into the starting lineup. Because at the end of the day, the playoffs are about dudes. They're about guys. And Wiggins is, due to his experience, further along than someone like Moses Moody. So if Wiggins misses, say, 10 games, I think at first, Moody's still starting as they get Wiggins healthy, as they get him back into shape. But to me, the postseason is still, you still need Wiggins to unlock the best version of this team. And that, to me, is what's frustrating about the personal leave of absence, is I'm curious how it's going to mesh when he comes back. Is it just going to be a flawless, seamless fit when he returns? How does that impact Moody? Does that matter? And I just wonder how fans are feeling about the team right now without Wiggins. So again, 888-957-9570. Let's get out to Austin from San Jose. Always a voice of reason here on 95.7 The Game. Austin, my man, how are you?
Hey, fellas, what's going on? Listen, just a couple comments. One is just on Moody. I've been back and forth on this guy. I like him, but mm-hmm. I want to say more. I want to see more. Small sample size. I think the real issue with Moody, I think the reason why he wasn't playing, it's not because Kerr is an idiot. It's because if you really think about Moody, we got to figure out what he does well every night. Jack of all trades is really not a good place to be in the NBA. So if you're going to stay in the NBA, you have to say, what is he going to be? Is he going to be a defender? Is he going to be a shooter? Is he going to be a two-way guy? I don't see him as a Wiggins. I don't see him as a Klay Thompson. So at least in terms of career, he's somewhere in the middle is where he is, but I think that's where Moody struggles. So let's see him over 10 games. Let's see what he turns out to be before we start saying, hey, he's got to play. Yeah, he's got to play now, but you got to see whether he can be that consistent guy over time. The other question I had was kind of throwing something on the table, guys. You got one guy you can bring back next year. either CP3 or Klay Thompson. Who are you bringing back on a 2-year? Klay Thompson or CP3? And you can only break one. So let me know what you think. Thanks.
Austin, that's a great question. I mean, I have my answer, Dan. I think it's pretty clear.
Go ahead.
It's Klay Thompson. I love Chris Paul. I think he's been very good for this team. But, for example, to just use Moses Moody, I think one reason that I've been hesitant about Moses, and we talk about like the numbers game, or have talked about the numbers game, is to me, I just don't think I don't think he shoots it well enough from 3-point range. I don't, and he has over these three games, but over the course of his career, he's about league average or less, and has been less than league average for the majority of the season. That to me is an issue if you're not a plus plus defender, if you're not supremely athletic, and to Austin's point, is kind of a master of none. Moody has shot it really well on this road trip so far, and that to me has been unlocking a lot for the Warriors. But where else outside of Curry do you have consistent three-point shooting? That to me is something that only Klay Thompson right now can bring, and unless you're going to replace that this offseason, I would prioritize him over Chris Paul.
It's a great question. Really a good question, because to me there's not an easy answer. And while I agree with what it is that you say, because he is the one guy, and it's the reason why, probably to answer my own question, why Steve Kerr plays him so much, because he's in that second unit now, which means typically Steph is sitting a lot of the times. And so when Steph is sitting, who's the other guy that's going to give you perimeter shooting? It's Klay Thompson. But at the same time, Klay Thompson's lack of consistency is something you really have to take into consideration. And Klay Thompson, more than the other two older players on this team, namely Steph Curry and Draymond Green, shows his age to me more than anybody else. Last night he was good, but he just, you know, what you have to understand is that defensively, you know, he is not the same guy. And all that energy that I talked about that the young players provide, that is not Klay Thompson any longer. Klay Thompson at times is just somebody that's just there. And is taking up space, and his at times it's so clear that the his better years are so far in the rearview mirror. But then, you know, he'll get into a zone and provides that perimeter shooting that is so valued not only with the Golden State Warriors throughout the league, but you offset that when you think about what it is that Chris Paul has been able to do with this basketball team, that calming force, almost like a player's coach, doesn't turn the ball over, has everybody in the right spot. I mean, we talk about Draymond Green's impact when he came back to this team. To me, it's been very noticeable with Chris Paul back. Chris Paul is a calming influence, and he is, you know, he makes this team better. He is somebody that just with a ball in his hands, you feel secure. At times, the Warriors just play with their hair on fire, and that can be really volatile, really good. And at other times, it's like, oh my God, somebody please put this out. And he's sort of that steadying factor that just doesn't let you get, you know, out of control, and you just feel as though dad's home, you know, there's a parent in the room. And so I don't know. I mean, it's not as easy an answer to a question that for you, as for me, as it was for you. Because I see Chris Paul as being somebody that really is a major contributor to this basketball team. And Klay Thompson is sort of a hit or miss, but I recognize the outside shooting and what it is that he does in terms of spacing, in terms of drawing crowds and double teams and opening opportunities, especially in the pick and roll, as we've seen with Trayce Jackson-Davis. I mean, there's not a lot of guys that have that gravitational pull like that of Klay Thompson, which I fully recognize. But then the drop-off is something that you really – the warts on him is something that you really have to consider at age 34 now. The other answer, just really quick to address what it is that Austin had to say – when he's talking about, you know, jack of all trades, those sort of players, and I forgot how he phrased it, are not necessarily somebody that, you know, they don't have the same level of importance. And I would push back a little bit when you think about, I mentioned Jrue Holiday, sort of a jack of all trades kind of guy, Caruso with Chicago and LA, jack of all trade kind of guy, and somebody that we're certainly familiar with, and Andre Iguodala sort of fits under that heading. So I think those guys are really, really invaluable. I think the guys that do everything, that maybe aren't the star players and maybe can't shoot it like you mentioned, like Steph, or but are somebody that D it up, that go on both ends, that get you rebounds, that make the right pass, that have that length as those coveted wing players, that, you know, from that 6'7 to 6'8 frame. Guys like that are really, really well, they may not be star players. And they don't, maybe they're not the first guy you recognize in a roster, but they have a remarkable, remarkable value, I think, to a winning team.
Well, that's why he's valuable. I mean, it's not just the master of none description. To me, it's because he's a wing. Like, you need wings in the NBA to win, and you need high level wings. So the hope is that Kuminga and Moody, and Kuminga's further along, but that those two players can turn into solid wing players. Now, I guess I'd push back in the sense that, okay, what does Drew Holiday do well? He can guard the number one option on an opposing team. Caruso, the same. Iguodala, the same. Like, those guys are maybe not, you know, you don't look at them and say, this is the one thing that they, you know, excel at. They just do everything well. But they're also three of the best two-way players, you know, that we've seen. So, Moody, I wouldn't consider yet a two-way player, but he's got a 7-foot wingspan. He's 6'6", 6'7". That in and of itself is valuable. And I think against players like we've seen, like, we can only take the last three games. But for example, I thought the job he did on, say, Jalen Brunson was his most impressive. Brunson's a good player. Now, he was missing a few of his running mates. But Brunson also isn't a guy that can beat you with speed. Like Moody, to me, is a perfect matchup against someone like Brunson, because where Brunson excels is using his physicality, kind of the low man wins mentality, to either get into the paint, take small step backs, or be able to get to his spot and make J's. Moody is able to stay with him because Brunson doesn't have great foot speed. Against someone like Boston, I wonder if Moses Moody can stay in front of Drew Holiday, if he can stay in front of Jason Tatum, players that are both strong as well as quick and more athletic than, say, Brunson. So that, to me, is going to be a great test. But I am with Austin in the sense that I do think we need to see more from him. But to me, it doesn't negate the fact that over these three games, when he's gotten a chance to start, that he has elevated the floor just the way that Pajemski has elevated the floor of this starting lineup. And that, to me, is valuable. Even though you're not looking, I mean, they're not putting up 25 a night. They're not going to go hit 10 threes. But they don't hurt you when they're in. And when you have Curry with Dre, with Kuminga, three players that are going to take the reins of the game and impose their will in different ways, then you just need players around them that will do their job. And Moses Moody does that better than a lot of players on this. Like, that's one of the reasons why Chris Paul's so good. You know exactly what you're going to get from him. And in regards to the question about Clay or CP this summer, you know, to me, I'm not trying to downplay how good Chris Paul is and how good he's been for this team. But they started to make their run and turn this season around when Chris Paul was hurt. To me, I look at Chris Paul as gravy. I think he's a fantastic addition off the bench. He's a floor general. He's someone that can help you in multiple areas, and he kind of fills gaps. To me, Klay Thompson, now that he's on the bench, yes, he's inconsistent. But when he has a night, like he did, say, against Washington, that's a game that you can just win by Klay Thompson getting you 25. They were up 16 in the first quarter and the second quarter, pardon me, against Denver because Klay Thompson shot the hell out of the basketball. I thought they lost the game against Denver because outside of Klay, there was nobody that had and imposed their will in the second half, including Klay. But there was no one that really stepped up in that game. They were ahead in that game because of Klay. I don't know if Chris Paul's got a 25-point half in him at this point in his career.
No, he never has. I don't think that's the reason why the Warriors got him. But the thing, I think, with Klay Thompson is that he's become very one-dimensional. And if he's not shooting it well, the question then becomes, well, what is it that he's providing for your basketball team? And I would argue that he's become a bit of a liability defensively, although Klay? He had big rebounds. Yeah, Klay Thompson.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he had big rebound numbers against Toronto, but he's not. You talk about Moses Moody. Klay Thompson isn't staying in front of people any longer. And he's really become an area of... Now, he's another one of those guys, deceptively, at 6'6", 6'7", that has the ability to, you know, to get out on the wing and defend guys and has that length. But he's not the defensive player he once was. And if he's not shooting it well, you know, then... You know, then where you at with a guy who's now in his mid-30s? I think I think when you talk about Chris Paul, has really, it's difficult to sort of, you know, when you think about Chris Paul, to quantify what it is that he does that makes him so good. But you look at, you know, the pick and roll, and you knew this was going to happen with him and Trayce Jackson-Davis. He makes the Golden State Warriors just a better basketball team. And this is the very reason why they went out and they were able to get him. So it's an interesting question going forward when you think about, you know, Klay Thompson, if it's an either or between those two. I mean, ideally, you like to keep both of those guys coming off the bench. I mean, how many times does Steve Kerr talk about, now I've got the luxury of having two Hall of Famers coming off of my bench?
That's true, but I do think that Austin brings up the point of which, in all likelihood, both of them are not going to be on the team next year because of the emphasis on getting below the second apron. If you bring both of them back, financially, it's just not feasible.
All right, Chris Paul's gone.
I agree. And I think that's because as much as I, like, this is where you're spot on. Like, the quantifiable aspect of Chris Paul's game, to me, is not, it doesn't do him justice. Like, for example, I could be off base with this. I'm curious what people think about it at 888-957-9570. I don't think Klay Thompson comes off the bench if Chris Paul's not on this team. And the reason being, Chris Paul set the tone of the season by starting 1,000-plus NBA games and saying, I can be the sixth man, by sacrificing. I think players have done that in the past for the Warriors. That's been a staple of their culture. Andre Iguodala was the first to sacrifice. Steph Curry's come off the bench. Draymond Green has come off the bench. Chris Paul at the beginning of this season had to come off the bench to help the Warriors win. I don't know if Klay Thompson is as okay with having his role relegated unless there's another first ballot Hall of Famer that's there with him. Klay Thompson has never come off the bench before this season. I don't think he wanted to necessarily, but he understands that's what's better for the team. And the person who set that standard at the beginning of this season is Chris Paul. So that's where I think he also adds, from a leadership standpoint, much more to this team that can go in a box score.
Well, yeah, I think you have to keep in mind and remember when he didn't close earlier this year and he had that conversation with Anthony Slater, The Athletic, and he talked about, he was pretty contrite and said, you know, this is tough.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And a lot of people interpreted that he was being really forthright about how difficult it is for him and older players to recognize they're no longer that guy. And I think that he had to have known the writing was on the wall. He could see what Pajemski was able to do. And he was also his worst critic, knowing that he was no longer shooting the ball as effectively as he once did. So I think that it may not have been imminent, but I do think making the transition from him to the bench was something that, if it didn't happen earlier this year, it was almost inevitable that it was going to happen at some point. So, yeah, and how is he to handle at that point? Well, sometimes when your hand's forced and you're not shooting it well, another guy who's much younger is playing at the pace and the level that Pajemski was able to demonstrate early on this year. It's either, you know what you don't really have a case to be made at that point. So I think that the transition from him to the bench is a little bit maybe dissimilar to that of Andre Iguodala as well as Chris Paul. So I think that the one issue I have is that he continues to play a lot of minutes, man, a lot of minutes. And all that tells me is that Steve Kerr, as much as we talk about the youth and as much as the youth has been able to make a difference to this Golden State Warrior team, that Steve Kerr is still inclined at the end of the day, someone's pointing a gun in his head, it's like, I'm going with my guys, man. I still believe in Klay Thompson and mm-hmm. not Trayce Jackson-Davis, and I'm not giving Jonathan Kuminga more minutes, and I'm not giving run to these other guys because I'm still going down with these. Like, there is not – I'm telling Steve – the one thing with Steve Kerr to me that is not notable is that – you know, he's been a willing participant to let these young players develop and become the new identity of winning basketball for the Golden State Warriors as we enter this new era. While you still have Steph being Steph, but again, I don't want to, you know, get all dramatic again and talk about the youth.
Yeah.
But he is not somebody that has it's happened simply because his hand was forced. Moses Moody's getting time for one reason and one reason only, and that's because Andrew Wiggins is doing whatever the hell it is that he's doing, his personal reasons, he's gone, and now Moses Moody is playing. It's not because Steve Kerr had the wherewithal to play this guy because he recognizes he can be an addition to this team. And the same could be true to a certain extent with Jonathan Kuminga, to Pajemski, to any young player, it's simply because Kerr had to, not because he wanted to.
I would disagree. Look, you're right. I mean, the beginning of the season, the vets were prioritized. And I think come postseason time, we might see some vets prioritized. But, and we've kind of talked about this, like, I don't know at the beginning of the season what fans wanted or what media members wanted from Kerr to immediately just play and start Pajemski or play and start TJD, or Kuminga is probably a better example. Like, Kuminga was supposed to just start at the beginning of the season. I know at some point he was, quote, out of the rotation, and I think that was a mistake. Moody, for example, not finishing against the Kings all way back, that was a mistake. But Kerr's learned from those experiences. And that's why I do think that the Warriors, as opposed to this year, are in a different place because they're not coming off of a championship. I don't know if it's being forced to play these guys, but I think there's a willingness now to lean more into the younger players because you are removed one more year from a championship. There isn't the expectation of getting, like, the expectation for the Warriors this year to me is to get back to where you did last year, to get to the second round. Anything beyond that is incredible. But I don't know, man. Like, I'm looking at the minutes and the totals for this team right now, and I know it's not exactly what you're saying, but Kuminga's played the third most minutes of any player on the team this year. Pajemski's played fourth most minutes of any player on the team this year. Like, Moses Moody's creeping up. Trace Jackson's creeping up. Kevon Looney's kind of been shrunk out of the rotation. Like, last night, TJD played six more minutes than Kevon Looney did. Over the last five games, he's played more than Kevon Looney has. And that's a champion. That's a three-time champ. Klay Thompson's now on the bench for Pajemski, who's a rookie. Like, I know it's taken a long time to get here, but there's 24 games left in an 82-game season, and now we're at the point where the young players are in the mix, in which I think the melting pot has become more of a, you know, an all-encompassing flavor. It's young, it's old, it's experience, it's youth. That, to me, is not something that I guess I expected from the beginning of the season. So, I don't know. It's taken a long time to get here, but I guess I would push back on the fact that Kerr has just been unwilling to give young guys opportunity.
No, not unwilling. He's just slow to the party. I think he's recognized, like I said, in his press conference last night, where he's like, yeah, at the beginning of the year, we thought we would use the same formula like we did 2 years ago to win a title, and things have changed. So it certainly wasn't in his thought process at the beginning of the year that I've got some young talent and I've got an older roster. I'm going to look to sort of work in some of these younger players. That's going to be sort of what I envision, sort of the winning formula or ingredient or recipe for this team is I've seen what it is Trace Jackson can do. Trace Jackson Davis can do. I've seen Pajemski, and I know Kuminga's got. So I'm going to make a concerted effort from day one to make sure that I bring these guys along so that when we get to the All-Star break or we get, you know, ankle deep into the season, you will know the identity of this team and what it is that I, Steve Kerr, want to do, and that is to get these youngsters some run. No, I don't think, you know, I don't think that that's been what it is that we've witnessed up to this point. I don't think he's been a willing participant. I think he's had to make a lot of those decisions.
And I want to continue that conversation on the other side. If you want to get into it, 888-957-9570 is the number. Is Kerr been late to the party? Has he been forced into this situation? How much credit does he get for a 13-3 stretch over the last 16 games? Are you giving it mostly to the players? Are you giving some of it to the coach? How are you divvying up that pie right now as the Warriors stand five games above 500 heading into Boston tomorrow? That's Dan DeVoe. My name is Evan Giddings. We're back after this on Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
Halfway at home on a Saturday morning, as always, Warriors this week. Dan Devone, Evan Giddings rocking with you. Warriors are 13-3 in their last 16. Thanks to the 5-1 on the Comcast Business Text Line. Game high in points. Curry's got 10. Klay's got 4. Wiggins with 1. Kuminga with 1. Youngers have been starting, but Curry and Klay are still doing a lot of the scoring. I think that's an interesting point to kind of look at. Yes, we are talking about the young players. Moses Moody's been a lot better. Kuminga, I thought, was a man amongst boys in New York. But at the end of the day, we're right. It's funny. We've been doing this show for about 90 minutes, and the contributions of one Stephen Curry haven't really come up a whole lot. And I honestly, Dan, I got to apologize to the man a little bit, because I suggested, I think it maybe was last show we did, but also earlier in the week, that he looked tired, and you know, I think he might have needed a game off on the back-to-back. And 5 games before the game in, I think it was New York, you know, he was shooting 28% from three. And then, ho-hum, he breaks out of his slump, posts 30 points against New York, has another big game last night in Toronto. And it's just pretty much back to usual, 25-6-6 for the Chef.
Yeah, wait, sorry. If I see my name up there, I've got to, like, you know, because it's all about me. It's the Danavon Retirement Fund, right? That's what the show's all about. So I was talking about the youth movement, and somebody chimed in. Does that apply to older radio hosts, Dan? Yes, it does. What? Hey, I'm looking, man. I'm ready to move out of the way and let young Evan Giddings, who doesn't need me to move out of the way before he makes his statement. But yeah, it applies to all. Listen, it's a young person's world, man, including every facet, including sex, man. You get older, I mean, I'm telling you, man. It's a young person's world at every level. That's who owns this thing, especially when it comes to sports. It is about. Now, listen, you want to have, if you're completely young, then you become Detroit, right? Or, you know, if you're young with no guidance and you become a team that needs some level of experience like that of Steph Curry. I'm glad you mentioned Steph, because the one thing that scares me about Steph Curry is that, you know, is that injury going to happen? Sorry to even go there, but like every year.
Strike it from the record.
Every year there has been something, right? And it's actually been beneficial to the Warriors. It's sort of this inadvertent load management. He's out for a couple of weeks. He's out. But it usually happens towards the early or middle part of the season. You can ill afford to lose him now. And, you know, the same thing is I was reading and talking to a buddy out in Los Angeles that they're saying the same thing about LeBron. Usually he misses that, you know, 15 to 20, 25 games. It hasn't happened this year.
Yeah.
It's like, they're so LeBron-centric that can't happen at this point as you know, we're at the top of the stretch.
That's true. But this is also where I think, and sorry, sidetracked. My name's not in this text, but yours is. From the 510 of the Comcast Business Text Line. And it applies after your last statement, Dana. Let Devone jacket.
Thank you.
Look, it's a young man's game. Also, shout out 888-957-9570. If anybody wants to guess Dan Devone's age, please feel free to call in. We're taking all suggestions. He has a very ambiguous look, but he is a young, older man. Kind of like the Steph Curry of the show. Kind of like a Steph Curry.
You know? Awkwardly dancing around this.
Curry doesn't look 35 going on 36, but he is.
So did he have his fourth child, or she's...
I think she's just pregnant. Again, it's the fifth, you know, because Boston's in there. But no, you're right. It's like...
that.
Yeah, he's going to have his fourth child. Oh my gosh. He's got a way to go to beat Phillip Rivers, but he's...
Phillip Rivers or Sean Kemp, but...
Or Antonio Cromartie. he's on his way.
Well, the difference is that Steph Curry is still married to...
Of course.
All his children are his.
All the best of the Currys. Let's get back into Steve Kerr, though, before we pivot here. There is something fun I want to get to. And actually, you have a very rare expertise that I think can apply to a situation that we saw at the tail end of the New York game between Draymond and Wonbonte Hill. But before we get into that, let's get out to Clayton. Talk to Khaled, wants to talk about Steve Kerr. What's up, Khaled? You're on Warriors This Week. How are you?
I'm doing good, Dan and Evan. Hope you guys are having a great weekend. Wanted to, you know, just chime in and say that I think Steve Kerr's contribution to this 13-3 run is being, you know, heavily underrated. I mean, he catches hell all the time when the team's not doing well or when their favorite players aren't being put in, but as soon as they strike fire, it's always the players. So it's the players got together and they did this. But people don't understand the delicate balance that this guy has to walk, because Steph Curry has a lot to do with who's on the floor at certain times as well. I mean, it's, if people don't think that Steph has conversations, maybe not during the game, but has conversations in regards to his preferred guys that are out there with him, they're crazy. And, you know, imagine having all of these veterans with these younger players and having the depth that they honestly have. Their depth is actually a detriment to an extent, and it's admirable what he's been able to do to walk that balance between keeping Steph and the veterans happy and also developing the young guys. And if anyone, if I ever hear again that they're not developing young guys after what we've seen with Kuminga, with even Moody, who's been getting DNPs, but you see what he's doing, with, you know, Brandon Pajemski, TJD, you know, talent is one thing, but to see the influence that he and the other coaches have had on them in regards to getting them to buy into the system and work with a very difficult player like Steph, in the sense, not difficult by attitude, but difficult in regards to learning how you have to function within that organic system that they run with all the cutting, the screens, and all the rest of that stuff. That's not an easy thing.
I got you, Khaled. Sorry, Devon was chuckling at the text line, I believe. I just asked how old everyone thinks he is, and the numbers are staggering. Thanks for the call, Khaled.
Yeah, look.
You're younger than Steve Kerr. How about that?
You know, well, here's the thing when it comes to Coach Kerr. I don't think that, don't get it wrong. Where would you put him as coaches right now in the NBA? He's like right at the very top.
Top five.
Top, no doubt. Yeah. Top three. I'm sorry, if I'm starting a new franchise and I can't get Popovich and I can't get Spo in Miami, I'm going Steve Kerr.
Shoot, I might take Kerr over Popovich right now.
Yeah, well, because Popovich is 87 years old. But, you know,
Devone is not.
I do not have... let me just start there and preface by saying this dude is still remarkable as a coach. Remarkable in that he still gets the respect of his players. He's still level-headed. Oh, it was fun. Yes, did you see him last night chew some butt, which he doesn't do?
Oh, yeah, at the beginning of the game, he was pissed. That was awesome.
Quick time. And see, that's just it.
Wasn't it the ref?
When you don't do it frequently and it's infrequent and you chew somebody out, it's like, whoa, we've done something wrong and we need to wake up and get going, because coach never necessarily is dropping F-bombs directed at us. Like, that was fun.
No, but that's one of the parts about Steve Kerr I love. Like, he is at his core like a competitive, fiery SOB. Like, he can unleash that upon players, and I'm sure he does it in practice more. But Steve Kerr's the kind of guy, like, he's a consummate pro at the podium. I think he's been through so many walks of life that he just understands people and is great with understanding where he fits in and how people's relationships kind of, you know, navigate themselves through sports. But if he wants to chew your ass out, like, I feel like he's the kind of guy who can swear like a sailor, or likes to swear like a sailor at times to prove his point. And you get little glimpses of it from time to time. But it was funny, we were at the bar yesterday, the cafeteria yesterday, and at the beginning of the game, you know, the Warriors come out a little flat. I think Toronto goes up, what, like 17-9 or something like that. And Kerr's just fiery. And at first I thought he was yelling at a ref, because there might have been a call that was missed or something, but no, like, he was chewing out his players on the tail end of a back-to-back after getting in at 7 a.m. because the plane had mechanical issues. Your team's tired. They're probably run ragged from the night before in New York. They're feeling themselves a little bit. They got to go through customs. They're pissed. They're tired. They're frustrated. And here's Steve Kerr like, no, MFers, like, get your ass up. This is a game we got to win. And I love that part of Steve Kerr, because you know he's got it in him. And you're right, he doesn't show it often.
And it was an ATO. It was right after a time. He had just taken a timeout. And coaches are very sensitive to, we'll call timeout, stop the bleeding, call a play. But if you screw that up and go right back to where you were pre-timeout, like, that really gets after him. And so he had two quick timeouts and just went after his players. I think the misperception with Kerr, I think a lot of people think he's just this really smart, nice guy, well-read, articulate kid next door. Go look at his playing career. This dude, there's a reason why Michael Jordan laid him out. Like, he's yeah, a feisty dude. He'll get in your face. And he's been in more than one scrap in his NBA career. And I'm with you. It's one of the reasons why I appreciate the guy as well. I like him as a head coach. But just like any coach, just like any player, we all love Steph. But they're not beyond criticism. And I think even Steve would if you were to have a beer with him, maybe not, at the end of the day would say, yeah, I've been a little bit slow to the party, recognizing some of the youth on this team. And that's all I'm pointing out. This isn't an indictment that he sucks as a coach. And I never wanted to be that guy when they were losing saying this is Kerr's fault. And I think if you listen to the show, we never did that. I'm just saying, and I'm not speaking for you. This is just me. I do think that if there's, you know, Steve Kerr, if there's any sort of criticism to be leveled at him this year, is that it took time for him to sort of recognize what was taking place in front of his very eyes, that it just wasn't youth, it was impactful, talented youth that combined with that of the experience and the Steph Currys of the world, that you might have something here. And that's clearly what's happening to this basketball team. But I still think, you know, at the end of the day, that push comes to shove, he's going to lean towards a Klay Thompson getting 30 minutes a game as opposed to Moses Moody cutting into those minutes or Trayce Jackson-Davis getting some runs. So I still think, while he certainly embraced it, and you could see it, but I still think it's sort of an ongoing situation.
I think that criticism is fair. Just like during the losing streak, criticism of some of the players was fair. Criticism of Klay Thompson during his slump and his, you know, attitude in the locker, I think that was fair. I think criticism of Draymond Green this year has been fair, although apparently not from Bonte Hill. And I think that Steve Kerr is someone, to me, the way I feel about Kerr is this. You can't have it both ways, right? If you don't believe that he can develop young players, well, you can't say that he has it. Like, I should say this. Let me phrase that better. The Warriors now have players that are younger, two 21-year-olds in the starting lineup, essentially, even though Pods didn't start last night. So you can't say that he hasn't developed players. And I don't necessarily think it's the head coach's job to develop players. I think it's his job to win. I also don't think that Kerr has been someone that's been totally reluctant to lean in on young players. I think it's just a situation, and it's very rare in the NBA where you have three veteran members of a dynasty, or whatever the dynasty is now at this point, and trying to bring upon like the next wave. I just think that's a very hard needle to thread for a top five head coach, for a Hall of Fame head coach, for a bottom five, like for any position or any head coach that would be in Steve Kerr's position. I'd like to think he's done a pretty damn good job. Like Eric Spoelstra, for example, I think he's the best head coach in the NBA. I don't know how much further along these players would be if Spo was their head coach, because Spo in Miami has never had to prioritize champions outside of LeBron and D-Wade and all the, and on those teams, the veterans were playing. There was no young players that were coming up during the Miami dynasty that have now taken over the reins. It happened after they left. They went and got Jimmy Butler. They drafted Bam Adebayo. They drafted Tyler Hero. They've developed players, but not from a place of their dynasty. It's taken them time to get over the... So, like, I guess when someone says Kerr hasn't done a very good job this year, I'm not saying you're saying that. I think what you're saying is fair, that he's been late to the party at points. My thing is, I just don't know who else would be doing a significantly better job than what he's done right now. And I'm with the caller. If the 13-3 is something that is, we're going to give credit to Dre, we're going to give credit to Steph, we're going to give credit to Kuminga and Pajemski and Clay for taking a new role, Paul coming back, Moody emerging, all this stuff, credit has to be given to the head coach. Because if we're going to come down his road, on the flip side, he's also the head coach of a team that is the second hottest team in the NBA right now.
It's almost, you know, it's an admission much like that of... Or an omission, I should say. Much like that of Steph Curry. You just pointed it out. We're like, you know, 2 hours deep into the show, and we're talking about the Golden State Warriors in this 13-3 run, 8 wins on the road, and we haven't even talked about the exploits of Steph Curry and how good he's been. I think it's almost sort of baked in at this point that we recognize, it goes without saying, how good of a coach he is, and that none of this happens without Steve Kerr. This whole dynasty is attributed to, yes, the big three, but Steve Kerr is also a big, big part of that. I think it's sort of woven into the fabric. Like, do we at this point really have to underline the fact that Steve Kerr has a lot to do with a 13-3 run? I think you do that for a coach that maybe is a little bit maligned, and you're like, oh, well, you know, this head coach necessarily, you know, we need to to recognize what it is that the, his contributions have been. I think Steve Kerr at this point has established himself as one of the premier coaches, not only currently in the NBA, but I'd say historically one of the best to ever do it. So the bar is extremely high for him and the Golden State Warriors. Why I think it's more glaring when you see a mistake, because they're so infrequent. And to me, while people don't necessarily have to agree, I think that, you know, Steve Kerr is usually on top of everything, and very rarely can you point at something and say, yeah, I think you're missing it here. But to me, one of the few times during his remarkable run with the Golden State Warriors, which has been a challenging year, obviously, this year coaching for the Golden State Warriors, is the fact that, you know, he has not been readily embracing a youth movement that I think has been there from day one.
Yeah, and one thing that's been synonymous with Steve Kerr's teams, and Uncle Looney points this out on the YouTube chat powered by First NorCal Credit Union, coaching is about managing egos. You can see the chemistry in his great Kerr is, and a lot of the credit has to go to the coaching staff. I agree. Like, the Warriors are synonymous with chemistry and culture outside of last season for very obvious reasons. I think that even though some of that residue still remains in particular areas, they've done about as good of a job as you can of wiping whatever plagued them last season off of the court away from the organization. And I'm not just pointing the finger at Jordan Poole. I think there's been internal growth from a lot of players that have had agendas. And Klay Thompson was one of them. Chris Paul might have been one of them coming into the season. Draymond Green. I think that's maybe why the Andrew Wiggins leave of absence is not concerning, but I think just like there's a little PTSD for a lot of people when they hear out for personal reasons, and there's a family matter, because last year he came back and he ended up playing hurt in the playoffs. So I think if the Warriors are to be at their best, Andrew Wiggins needs to be on this team. But it's difficult to envision, or not, I guess, go down the road of, oh, well, here we go again. So, you know, I think that Kerr also, like, during this stretch, you know, it's primarily Green, Kuminga, Wiggins. That's really been the front line that has changed this part of the season around. I think Kerr ultimately knows, and he's got four rings to prove it, what wins in the playoffs. And as much as you want to see young guys developed, I don't know if it was fair to expect last season, and certainly not their rookie season, someone like Kuminga and Moody, their first time in the playoffs or near a playoff series, to be ready to contribute, even if they had gotten more rope in the regular season. I'm very curious to see how this postseason Kuminga plays, as finally a guy that is in the starting lineup, that is not looking over his shoulder, and that has been empowered, or has forced Steve Kerr to empower him. How does he play in a playoff series? That's to me why the Wiggins thing is important to me from a basketball standpoint, because I'm just worried that if Wiggins is not at his best, the Warriors inherently cannot be at their best, because in the playoffs, it is about experience. It is about vets. And when you look at a team like Denver, if you're just measuring, you know, starting fives, well, they have all the players right now in their primes, but they now have championship experience. KCP's got multiple titles. Jokic is at the top of his game, but they have players that have been battle-tested. The Warriors have plenty of experience from their, you know, their big three and their core, but their young guys still are yet, they don't have as much experience. So that's why, to me, the Wiggins thing is, I guess, a little bit interesting, just because I do feel like Kerr is going to get him back into the starting lineup when he and if he returns, just because he knows that's the winning equation.
I would agree with you. I think the original question that we were bantering about is, what do you do with Moses Moody going forward?
Yeah.
And I think it's more of a reflection on Moses Moody. While Wiggins, if you're going to make that run in the postseason, and you talk about dethroning the Denver Nuggets, yes, you're going to need the best version of Andrew Wiggins, and you're going to need that experience. I completely agree with you. Things change when you get to the postseason. But what do you do with Moses Moody when he returns? Has Moses Moody, to you, made the case that the idea that this is just a numbers game and we can't play you, or you're relegated to just a few minutes a game, is that still applicable? Because I would argue no. Moses Moody has proven to everybody that now he needs an opportunity to get some serious run. Granted that you're going 12 deep, but I told you, I laid out how I think it should take place.
Yep.
Where Saric, Looney, being removed from the rotation and also cutting into the minutes of one Pajemski as well as Klay Thompson.
Yeah, the Looney thing is interesting because I mean, God love him. He's not been very good this year.
But he is 6'9".
He is 6'9", and he's also he's played in a lot of big games. And he's played well in big games, even if he hasn't played consistently well throughout this season. Like, do I think if the Warriors get to a postseason series against probably one of the top four seeds, right? Or they will play one of the top four seeds if they get in. I think Looney, early in that series, is probably going to play more than Trayce Jackson-Davis. And we might be having the same conversation again of, well, do you actually trust the young guys? It's not that I don't think Kerr trusts young players, but you have to go with, in my opinion, who's been there in the moment before. So it's a delicate balance, and we're getting ahead of ourselves, but I think your question about Moody. So to me, where I would look would be a couple players. I think you're right. Šarić, to me, he's played himself out of the rotation. Like, God love him. If he's not hitting shots at a high clip, I just don't think he helps you. I think he hurts you so much on defense. Even when they slide him to the four and they have Looney or Dre or TJD at the five, I think Šarić just really hurts you. The only thing that he helps with is spacing the floor for someone like Kuminga, because I think when Šarić goes to the four, Kuminga can play more of the three. But I also think that Šarić has taken some minutes away at the four from Kuminga. So it's not just Moody, it's also JK. I'm looking at, you know, I think last night's game is probably tough to kind of configure minutes because you had multiple players out. You had Pods out. Klay was back in the starting lineup. Wiggins is obviously out. And then also Gary Payton the second. But I think Payton's minutes are probably best around 10 because I just think he's a little injury prone. Not that he's not a good player, but I wouldn't want to work him more than, I would say, 15 minutes just because I'm afraid he's going to break down. And he might have even got hurt against New York. You know, I think what Kerr has done quietly with someone like Draymond Green can allow Moody to play a little bit more. Like, for example, since Draymond Green came back, you know he hasn't played more than 30 minutes in a single game. Like, that is also kind of quietly significant. I think Pajemski doesn't need to play 30 to 35 minutes a game. I think he could play in 25 and give some of those minutes to Moody. So I'm with you. I think Šarić shrinking out of the rotation wholly, which he kind of did against Toronto. I think keeping the backup five position not as in the limelight or not bringing it, like, you don't have to play, I think, a traditional center as much as some people would want on certain nights. And then I think bringing Pajemski's minutes down a little bit, along with keeping Draymond and Steph's minutes to around 30 or below, I think that's enough to carve out 15 minutes for Moses Moody. Quinones is not going to play.
How about elevating Kuminga's minutes as well?
I think that's something that's to me more related to Šarić than it is to Moody, because I think Moody and JK play different spots. But you're right. Yeah, I completely agree. And I want to continue that conversation on the other side. Also see calls. 888-957-9570 is the number. Getting into the conversation. Also, we will get into Draymond Green and Bonte Hill's interaction after the Knicks game, because Dan has had a long history of being in those positions, being on television, being in locker rooms, talking to big boys, and I want to know what he thought about how Bonte, as well as Draymond Green, handled that. All of that is in the final hour coming up next year on Warriors This Week. Evan Giddings alongside Dan DeVone, back after this on 95.7 The Game.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.